Greetings, listeners. This is Leo Baybue with KTWHLP, Two Harbors Community Radio, speaking today with Minnesota State Senator Grant Housechild, who represents Senate District 3 in the Minnesota Legislature. He's taking a moment away from an incredibly busy 2023 legislative session schedule. Senator Housechild, you may remember, was elected this last November 2022 and is like about 4 months deep into his first legislative session. Welcome to KTWH, Senator Housechild.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
It is our pleasure. There is so much to cover, and I know you have business pending just less than half an hour away. So I guess it was something in researching the newly constructed district, Senate District 3, that I saw just how big the area is that you represent. Can you remind us, do you know the square mileage? It looks like it's as big as several eastern U.S. states.
That's right. I don't know the exact square mileage, but I do know that it's approximately the size of Massachusetts, which is really incredible when you think there are governors that manage smaller landmass than this Senate district.
Yeah, I find that amazing. We're going to try to cover a gamut of issues today, Grant, and to flip the script a bit, I hope you don't mind me just asking this, even if it's a little premature. We heard through the grapevine this weekend that you'd had success getting funding for the Highway 61 rebuild project in Two Harbors into a Senate transportation funding package. Can you fill us in on what the details are and the prospects that this can actually come through in the final funding bill?
Absolutely. So the transportation omnibus bill is almost always one of the largest bills in the session because transportation costs are so enormous. And in that bill on the Senate floor, I made a negotiation with the chair of the Transportation Committee to include a direct appropriation for the Highway 61 project. The reason this is really critical is because that project through the Minnesota Department of Transportation is facing a funding gap of about $11 million. And what that means is that the department will just expand out the project to multiple construction seasons to make up for that budget gap. So what I was able to secure is $11 million for that gap in the Senate Transportation Omnibus on the floor so that we can get this project done as quickly as possible for our businesses and the tourism economy all up the North Shore, but especially for Two Harbors. I have a commitment from the chair of the Transportation Committee to keep that in the final transportation bill, so I feel very confident. That said, you know, the ink isn't dry until it's signed by the governor, so we'll see what happens, but I'm fighting as hard as I possibly can for this funding for our region.
Your belief is the right parties are in alignment with keeping this in, because I didn't know if the House bill needed to go to conference. And you're saying that you think you think we might have the special sauce for this to stay in and get signed by the governor.
I think so. Wow. I have been very clear with the chair of the Senate committee that I need this money in the final bill in order to support it. So I think they understand the critical need for this project. I'd also note it was only one of two appropriations in the overall bill. So we were very lucky to have our project included as one of only two. Yep.
So that question, that update on this very important issue, because as you said, a number of people were afraid that we were going to face many, many years of a staged project, and you may have helped alleviate some of that stress. What are some of the most important goals that you had wanted to get done for this large district coming into office, and on which of those concerns do you think we've had positive action already taken this session? If you can even wrap your arms around all those things, just maybe some focus on what you're getting done in general for Minnesotans before the session ends for May that were among your major priorities when you were campaigning.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first and foremost, infrastructure and critical projects in the Northland were a key priority for me, both in the bonding bill, but also as omnibus appropriations and various bills. We likely have over $75 million in different direct appropriations or bonding projects in District 3, which is, I'm sure, some sort of record, because it's really a huge number. Some of the things included in that are recreation facilities, trails, boat landings, hockey ice rinks, wastewater projects, all sorts of things that are really critical to our region. In addition to that, we're fighting for housing projects. We have workforce housing funded at historic levels, over $45 million in the Senate bill that will, I think, go directly to Greater Minnesota and places like the Northland to help with housing. We also are fighting for clean energy. And so in the energy bill, we have over $17 million for transmission line that will help us get more wind energy transmission to our region to help create a cleaner line of energy for our communities. So there's a lot of things that we're fighting for. You know, the transportation we already covered. I'm really excited, and I think we're going to see a lot of success and money coming north this session.
We're speaking today with Grant Housechild, Senator in the Minnesota Legislature, District 3. I know it must have been an enormous challenge diving into the legislative process. You're 4 months in. Are there any great surprises or maybe surprising challenges or actually things that are going smoother than expected? What's your take as a first-term senator with a one-member DFL majority where you're a pivotal point person in that one-member majority?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, being in this position really makes it so that you have to dive deep on every bill because you want to make sure that it's the right policy. If you're going to be that one vote that helps it across the line, you know, it really means you have to do your homework. You also feel pressure from all sides. And what I've been saying is it makes me a better senator to feel that pressure. You know, I really revel in the idea that I'm getting pressure from the left, the right, the middle, telling me how to vote, because what that does is gives me good perspective. So I feel good about that. You know, one of the challenges that has come about this session is nursing homes. This is really a critical need in our region as baby boomers retire. We're facing big economic strains when it comes to our nursing homes. I'm proud that we were able to get critical nursing home funding in the Senate bill that will go towards especially Greater Minnesota nursing homes. In addition to that, the Boundary Waters Care Center in Ely is facing some financial hardships. And so I have a direct appropriation in the Human Services Omnibus that will help them stay afloat, as well as money in the tax bill that will help provide them some critical money from taconite production taxes. So, you know, looking at some of those needs that sort of emerge out of nowhere and figuring out where to plug gaps is something that I've really enjoy jumping in on, and I think we'll see some success. It's kind of similar to that Highway 61 project. You hear the need all of a sudden in the middle of session, and you get to work figuring out how to plug the gap.
I think your comments about taking the pressure from all sides and representing everyone leads right to my question about the fact that it's unique and maybe unique in the state in District 3. Three new legislators representing our district, two in the House, you as a senator, you're in the DFL, the other two new members are Republicans, and you represent everyone in District 3. They all do. They all represent everyone in District 3, DFL voters, independents, Republicans, and even those non-voters out there. So yeah. Have you been able to work on bipartisan efforts, both with those District 3 colleagues and others?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Roger Scraba, Representative Scraba, and I in the northern part of the district have been working really hard. We're both on the Environment Committee. And so we've been working really diligently. I think him and I align a lot when it comes to environment and energy policy. And we have a lot of projects, like I've talked about, that we're supporting in those omnibus bills. In addition, keeping out some of the more far-reaching policies that would have a detrimental impact on our region has been something that I think him and I have been aligned on. And then in the southern part of the district, Representative Zeleznikar and I have worked really diligently on some really key projects, one being nursing homes that we already talked about. The other is some critical bonding projects like a sewer infrastructure project in Rice Lake, as well as the hockey expansion in Hermantown, and then the Highway 61 project in Two Harbors. So we're finding a lot of success, I think, working together on the things that we do agree on. And we'll certainly disagree on a heck of a lot. But at the end of the day, we have to be able to work together on the key priorities for our region, and I think we're succeeding at that.
I would like to go to some of those bigger issues where there might be philosophical, ideological differences, but we have seen the trifecta: state government controlled in both chambers by the DFL and the governor signing into law already a large part of a program that the DFL has been trying to work on this session. But I wanted to talk to you about the likely scenarios you think will play out when it comes to in particular, what's going to happen with the divvying up of purposes for that large state revenue surplus? Will we find a bunch of big needs like education getting one-time funding or a major component being returning money to the taxpayers? What about the issue of the tax cuts for Social Security and what that will cost, and even a mix of things, and even the fact that you can correct me if this is complex stuff, but there's the option that if you can't get enough GOP backing on the bonding bill, that you could have a cash capital budget for funding those big projects that wouldn't be a 60% majority to pass. What's on the table with all of the things going on with where that revenue surplus may go?
Well, no, I appreciate the question. It's kind of the big one as we enter the last few weeks here of session. I will say I came in as a new senator with really, really big priorities. And I'll name a couple. You know, Social Security tax relief was a big one for me. Child care tax credits. I'm the chief author of the bill to provide child care credits to young families to start their families and get jobs and employers to locate in our region. And public safety dollars directly to our police departments to help them recruit and retain officers. All of those things are some of the most expensive items in this legislative session. And the great news is that through my work on the tax committee, I think we're going to get all three of them at historic levels that we've never seen before. So for example, Social Security, we're for sure going to have over $1 billion in tax relief for our seniors on fixed income. We're going to have almost $1 billion for child care credits. We're going to have somewhere around $300 million in direct appropriations to our police departments and public safety. So those are some of the examples where I feel like I may not have gotten everything I wanted, but I got historic levels, and I can be proud of that. And I think the folks that really need the relief are going to get relief through a lot of that. You mentioned bonding, and I think this is a really critical point. When we set our budgets in the majority alongside the governor, we knew that the bonding project was going to be something that could be held hostage. We've seen this happen in previous legislative sessions. I was a city councilor in Hermantown where I was fighting for bonding last session with Senator Bach, and it all fell apart at the end. And that, I can't tell you how frustrating that is after all the work that went into that effort. So knowing that, we put aside over $2.3 billion into the capital investment budget so that we could do a cash-only bill that requires a simple majority. And so what I've been telling our local communities is that we will get this done one way or the other. Either we'll work with the other side and have the votes for a GO bonding bill, or we're prepared to do a cash bill. And I feel really confident in that, and I'm grateful that we've set aside that budget to do so.
Is that something that may come into play then in the last week of the session that I think ends on May 22nd? Because initially I heard that if Social Security taxes were cut, that was their bargaining chip from the GOP side on giving more support to bonding. Too much inside baseball? I don't want you to speculate about the other party necessarily.
You know, I certainly think we'll continue to negotiate in good faith with the Minnesota GOP. But what I will say is that we're ready to move and we're ready to fund these projects because we know how critical infrastructure is. It's been almost 4 years since we've had a bonding bill. So we don't have time to wait until the last minute for things to fall apart. At some point, we probably will move forward with a cash bill. Okay. And that's not meant to be partisan. It's just simply meant to get things done and make sure that we're securing this funding and doing it in a timely manner. And so we'll see what happens. You know, I know that Representative Zalesnikar and Representative Scraba did support the GO bonding bill in the House. Unfortunately, the Senate colleagues on the Iron Range did not follow suit. And so we'll kind of see how the chips land here at the end. But I'm hopeful we'll get it all done.
We're speaking today with Senator Grant Housechild, and we're running out of time. And if I could get some short takes from you on a couple of things. In addition to the child care tax provisions that sound very important indeed, there has also been a lot of discussion on a paid family medical leave insurance program. Do we get a bill this year or not? Will a funding plan, if we do it this year, be sufficient? And when would this actually go into effect? But maybe better to get your take on whether it has legs to happen this year.
Yeah, I think we're going to get it done. This is a key priority for me. You know, I have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. I have a wife who is much smarter than me and works a very high-level job at a hospital. And I've seen the stress that is put on our mothers, on our working professionals, on parents with child rearing. And we're one of the few countries in the first world that does not provide this benefit. We've seen other states do this, and we've set up a program that I think is going to do a lot to help position Minnesota to be the best place in the country for raising a family. Now, with that said, I have been, like every other issue, in the middle of this debate. So I have been working with labor, I've been working with the chamber, with the hospitality industry to make sure that if we're going to do this program, that it fits for Minnesota and that it specifically fits for northern Minnesota. Some of the things that I've done is get grants for small businesses. I've exempted the premium for many small business employers. I also am exempting seasonal workers up the North Shore because we know how critical it is that our North Shore has the workers that they need for those particular months when they're busiest. And so we're making a lot of progress. And I think we're going to see further progress as we near the end of session. But the bill is going to get done. It's a huge priority for me, and it's going to do wonders for families all across Minnesota.
I have one last issue, which is one that's of great importance to me personally, and that is it has taken a long time for us to have significant climate change action at either the state or federal levels. Mm-hmm. And we've in the last year seen the passage of the Federal Inflation Reduction Act and now the 100% clean energy bill in Minnesota. Both of these have passed. There's a lot of promise in what can happen, but a lot of work needed to do to get the actual clean energy solutions in motion, you know, the investments at the household and utility industry scale. Can you talk a little bit about why the 100% clean energy bill is good for Minnesotans rather than being maybe a premature or overreaching mandate that could lead to blackouts, as some of your colleagues in the legislature claimed during the debate?
Yeah, this is a misnomer. There's no blackouts. And the reason is because we have provisions in the bill that allow our utilities to go to the PUC to explain that if there are potentials for energy disruptions, that they will have plenty of time to get an exemption or to figure out resources in order to make that not happen. This is the other reason why I'm fighting for those matching dollars for the federal infrastructure bill for things like that wind transmission line to the Northland. We need to put our money where our mouths are. If we're going to support 100% energy neutral by 2040, then let's put up the money to get those matching funds to expand our transmission lines, expand our storage, expand all the things that we really need. One thing that I'm really excited about is Form Energy is an organization that is looking at iron ore battery storage. And when you talk about iron ore, you think about the Iron Range. And so we have a study that we are looking at and putting some resources behind to look at how we might use Iron Range iron in order to create iron ore battery storage in the state of Minnesota. This is something that I'm going to continue to lead on as we go forward to other legislative sessions, but this study will be really critical in showing us whether or not we can move forward at a larger scale in the Northland.
An interesting point for a state that doesn't have much of any fossil fuel reserves, that in fact we may have the resources to make a difference in a clean energy solution era. Thanks for that heads up. Yeah, we have to let you go. And I thank you so much for the time today, Senator Housechild. I hope we can do this again sometime. I know it might not be possible over the next 3 weeks because of the volume of things that need to be addressed. But here's best wishes for a successful wrap up and getting to the priorities that you're concerned about. And I hope that you and your fellow legislators in the House and Senate have a productive end of the session over the next 3 weeks. And I just want to wish you all the best in St. Paul and back home when you're in the Northland.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Okay. You take care.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye.
That was State Senator Grant Housechild, represents District 3 in the Minnesota Legislature. This is Leo Bebue for KTWH.